25 minutes now before 9 o'clock, and a pleasure to welcome Stosh Sielkowski here. Good morning.
Good morning, Larry.
It's great to have you here. And Stosh is relatively new to Pittsburgh. You came here how many years ago?
Just a little under 2 years ago, August of 2012, my wife and I moved here.
What brought you here?
My wife is actually from Pittsburgh. She grew up in Wilkinsburg, and she hadn't been back except to visit her parents a couple times a year for a long time. And in 2012, we realized that her mom was going to need some support. And so we decided to move back, and we've moved into her home, and we live there as a family together.
Oh, that's great. Is that in Wilkinsburg?
No, it's in Marysville.
Oh, actually. Okay. Because we've been spending a lot of time in Wilkinsburg lately. We just finished. In fact, in about an hour and a half, we're going to have kids from Wilkinsburg. We had a radio club there over the last 6 weeks with middle school and high school kids, and they created a lot of terrific things. You were born in Arkansas?
No, actually, I'm from Baltimore.
Aha. So give us a quick, how did you get from Baltimore to?
Terry and I met in the early 90s, and we were both school teachers. And in 2005, we visited Arkansas on a vacation and decided we'd like to live there. So we went back to Frederick, Maryland, where we were living, finished out our last year of teaching there. I retired, and we moved to Arkansas, and we lived there for 6 years, and it was a great experience.
I'll bet.
It was a wonderful place to live. It was a small community, and my wife had been a teacher, a music teacher. There were no jobs available for music teachers at the time in Arkansas, so she became a real estate agent. And I was very fortunate because I was retired and I have an interest in theater and storytelling. I was able to start my own theater group there. And for 6 years, we put on shows to raise money for the library and did some work for churches and things like that.
That's so great.
It was like a playground for me.
Yeah, so. what a great opportunity, both you and your wife, to kind of pursue different things, live in different places. And teaching is one great application that you think of. There are going to be workshops at the Three Rivers Storytelling Festival. And, you know, it's good just as a human being to be able to tell stories in a compelling way with a clear narrative to have conversations work better. It's good to be a good listener. And if you're a teacher, a lawyer, maybe a salesperson, somebody who manages other people, being able to use a story to clearly bring forward the points you want people to remember and to do so in a way that will leave an imprint is a pretty significant skill to have. And you can help sharpen. You can do two things, really. You can either simply celebrate the masterful skills that will be on display next week from storytellers that travel the country and the world in some cases that will be here at the Storytelling Festival. And or you can choose to sharpen your own skills by attending a workshop or two. When did you become part of the storytelling movement, per se, or I should say collective?
I started telling stories in my very first year of teaching. I found out early on in teaching, I was a chemistry teacher, a math teacher, and I found out that a story now and then in class about scientists, about the mathematicians, about discoveries really seemed to help keep the students on task and made the classes much more interesting, both for them and for myself. And then in the early 80s, I saw a television program on a Saturday morning called Three Stories Tall. And this man appeared on the screen. His name was John Spellman. He's a well-known storyteller, and outstanding storyteller who's traveled the world and in the United States. And I was entranced the way he told the story. And so I began to watch that show every Saturday morning. And it was an Emmy Award-winning show 3 years in a row. And I started to tell stories. A former student of mine had a small theater, and she and her husband liked to do things for children. In the summer of 85, she invited me to be their storyteller. She had remembered my stories in chemistry class.
Oh, that's great.
So I got into it that way. And then over the years, I got into it more and more. I studied with Mr. Spellman for 2 years and worked with some other storytellers to develop skills. And it got me hooked. I've done a lot of theater, and storytelling is a little bit, especially now I'm a little older, it's a little bit easier to do storytelling than to memorize a script. So.
Well, and especially as you get older, you have more experiences and anecdotes that relate to things, and it probably becomes easier in that regard, too. You should know, if you're wondering, storytellers are not reading scripts. They're telling stories, and they typically come out a little differently from time to time, depending on the interaction between the audience and the teller. And some great tellers are going to be present, some other great tellers, I should say, coming up. But we'll give you a sense of what the schedule is going to be. Everything's free, with the exception of the workshops, which have a moderate fee associated with them. But right now here at the Saturday Light Brigade, I thought we would have Stasi Olkowski give you an example of one of his stories. And whenever you're ready, you can share the story you've got to share.
The night before the last day of school, my freshman year in high school, my father came to me and said, "Son, there's some bad news. We got a letter from the school, and tuition is going to be doubled next year." My parents had chosen a Catholic high school for me called Calvert Hall. And at first I resisted. I didn't like the idea of going there because all my friends were going to go to a different school. But I fell in love with the school. I was fortunate as a freshman to play varsity soccer, made a lot of friends in the school, and so the thought of having to leave the school was difficult. My mother had been very ill that year, and my dad had actually taken a second job. He was a construction foreman, and he took a job as a bartender in the evening to help make enough money to meet all the needs. The tuition at that time, this was in 1956, was a fantastic sum of $100, and it was going to go up to $200. So the next morning, I went to school and went into the office and spoke to Brother Regis, who was the assistant principal and kind of secretary, and told him that I was going to have to leave the school and go to a public school the next year and ask him to get my papers for me so that I could pick them up later in the day. And as I was talking to Brother Regis, the principal came out of his office. His door had been open. His name was Brother Gabriel, and he was a really fine educator and loved all the boys, 1,200 boys in that school. And he hated to leave, to see any of his students have to leave the school. He said to me, "I'd like you to take a note over to the band room, to Mr. Eula." He wrote a little note on a card, folded it, and he said, "Wait for a reply, and I'll see you when you come back." So I went over to the band room. Our school was in the middle of Baltimore City. I went through the courtyard to the other building and down the steps to the basement. Mr. Eula looked at the note I gave him and said, "Just a minute, Mr. Oboe." And I was kind of surprised. I wondered why he called me a hobo or something. And he went into a small closet and brought out a little black case and handed it to me and said, "Here, take this back with you and let me write a little note here." He put a little note on the card, folded it, and gave it back. So I went back to the office, and Brother Gabriel was glad to see me, and I handed him the note, and he started to give him the little black box, but he said, no, 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 you hold on to that. And he looked at the note, and he smiled, and he said, Brother Regis, you don't have to get those papers in order. And he took me by the shoulders and looked me right in the eye and said, you're now on scholarship. You're a music scholarship. You're going to be the oboe player in the orchestra. Well, I had no idea what an oboe was, but I was glad he pronounced it so well, because I realized Mr. Eula had not called me oboe. Well, I went home with that news, and of course my mother was thrilled because she liked the idea that I went to this school. And that evening my father was so glad to hear the news, and you know, there's nothing like a son making his parents proud, especially I was a bit of a handful at that time. And my dad was able to go to the bar where he worked as a bartender in the evening and brag to the customers and some of his friends that his son was now on a music scholarship. And my mother, of course, telling the ladies at church, and Sodality ladies, how proud she was of me and everything. The interesting thing about this was I was going to be taking music lessons every Tuesday for the rest of the summer, and at Freitag's music store, and the school would pay for it. That first day, I opened that box in the evening and looked at the oboe in four pieces. It took me about 20 minutes to figure out which piece went where. And finally, a strange thing, the top of the oboe, where I figured you would put your mouth, was a hole, a very tiny hole, not even big enough to hold the pencil. And I didn't know what to do with that. So on Tuesday, when I went to my first lesson, I learned that an oboe has a double reed, two thin pieces of wood you put between your lips, and that's the way you get the air into it. So, well, every day after supper, I practiced religiously. I went to my room on the third floor. We lived in a row house, and I would work as hard as I could to get some sounds out of the oboe. For a long time, the only sounds that came out of there were things that terrified the neighborhood dogs. And finally, about the third week, one evening, my father walked to the steps at the near the kitchen and called up to the third floor, Stash, Stash. And I called down, yes, Pop, what is it? He said, for the love of God, stop. I'll get another part-time job.
Oh, my goodness. And that's the story. You know, it has to be true, right?
Yes.
It absolutely has to be true. And you just heard Stash Ciolkowski, and that is a hard instrument. Did you ever master
it? I learned to play it, not really well. Good enough to be in the band for 3 years and play in school orchestra. And it was a great experience. But the day I graduated, I gave back the oboe, and I've never played one since.
And that's it's just a great story to think about. And you can hear other stories, and from all different ranges, some of personal experience, some involving folklore, some historic characters, some pure fantasy. It's up to the storyteller. And what are some of the highlights that have struck you?
The interesting thing about the storytelling festival this year is we have Friday is mostly for youth. We have, starting at 10 o'clock in the morning, there are going to be youth tellers and a program with Megan Hicks working with the youth tellers, a workshop for them. And Friday in the afternoon, of course, there'll be children's stories in the afternoon under the tent and in another part of the school property in the building. And then on Friday evening, we have the Liars Contest at 7 o'clock. And I was in charge of that last year, and I will be again this year.
Oh,
and it's
very
a
good.
Great event.
Yeah.
And the winner of that event gets the Bowl of Shame. And actually, there is a monetary prize for that contest. And then we have the evening concert with the National Storytellers. And, of course, we have Andy Offit Irwin, Megan Hicks, and Charlotte Blake Alston, the three National Storytellers that are going to be presenting their programs. And unfortunately, Gregory Gibson Kenny will not be here this year because he developed some medical problems and had to back out. On Saturday, we have a program that starts all in the morning and goes all day until late at night. Saturday, we end the festival with the ghost stories. Before that will be a concert again by the National Storytellers. And there will be stories being told in two different places, one under the tent and one in the building in the auditorium all day long. In between, there may be some music. The story store will be open. And in the story store, we will have books and CDs and DVDs and a number of craft items that people have made to be sold. And just a lot of wonderful things going on. We'll have some refreshments available, also popcorn, lemonade, things like that. And there will be a food truck there on both days so that people can buy lunch and dinner. One of our sponsors, the Grable Foundation, has been very generous in helping us with putting this on. It is a free storytelling event for 2 days, but of course we had to raise money in order to make it free so we could pay the expenses for storytellers and everything else we need to do. So also the workshops on Friday morning will be the first workshop is actually Mike Perry, another storyteller, and myself will be doing Storytelling 102. It's kind of a second step in mm-hmm. learning storytelling and practicing and how to go about it and different things like that. And then Megan Hicks has a storytelling workshop on folding or an origami thing. Mm. And Andy Offit Irwin will be talking about building stories, and it'll be a workshop on building your own stories, something that you'd like to tell people about. And Charlotte Blake Alston is going to be talking about where have all the folk tales gone. Mm. And then on Sunday, once the festival is over for the general storytelling, there will be a master class on Sunday morning with Charlotte Blake Alston. And that is normally attended by local storytellers or people very interested in storytelling.
So, you can get the complete schedule and even more information than what Stosh just summarized by going to the Three Rivers Storytelling Festival website, which is the numeral 3 and then RSTF as in Rivers Story. Telling Festival, 3RSTF.org, and you'll be able to find all of that information. It's at Winchester Thurston School's North Campus in Allison Park. Wow, that just went by so quickly. Is there anything else that you wanted to add that we may have missed? I'm glad you mentioned the Grable Foundation and its support, particularly of the children and youth activities associated with the festival. And indeed, we should point out that the festival is intended for people of all ages. There's Absolutely. Activities there for adults Right. as well as kids.
And it's all family friendly. There, Yeah. it is a wonderful opportunity for people to hear stories and to really enjoy themselves. And Winchester Thurston School has been a marvelous host to allow us the use of their property and to make it possible for us to put this on in that area.
Well, thanks so much for being with us and for sharing the oboe story. I'm glad you're an oboe and not a hobo. So thanks very much.
Thank you.
That's Stosh Ziolkowski, and you'll see him and hear him, I hope, at the Three Rivers Storytelling Festival this coming Friday and Saturday, August 9th, Winchester Thurston School's North Campus.